Hi, everybody. I'm Patrick McEnroe, and this is Holding Court. All right, time for another edition of Holding Court, and very, very happy to have just a tremendous guest on with me today, coming to me from the other side of the world. So it's nighttime for me. It's morning for Mr. Mark Dreyer, who has written a book called Sporting Superpower, all about China and their interest in sports and politics. And in the world, or in business, Mark, and this is something that's intrigued me for obviously the last couple of months with the Peng Shuai story in the tennis world, and then into the Olympic Games, that of course the Winter Games that went on recently this year. But you've been living this life for a long time. You've covered a lot of sports over throughout your career. You've been living in China now for well over a decade. What's it like right now in China? Because they're sort of experiencing COVID, really a little bit what we experienced here in New York City about 2 years ago.
It's bizarre. It is. I just escaped the mainland a week ago because it just felt, you know, everyone was working from home. My family had actually been stuck out in Taiwan for the past 2 years because they've been unable to get visas to return, because that's how tight the border restriction has been. And so I was able to rejoin them. It didn't make much sense to stay in Beijing right at the moment, because, as I said, everyone's testing every single day. Compounds are sort of being locked down on a regular basis. They're trying to do everything but a citywide lockdown. You might have seen the headlines out of Shanghai, which was really, really messy and still ongoing there. So Beijing kind of holding the line, but everyone's working from home. And at that point, you know, I may as well work from here for the next little while and then see how things are. But it's a tense time, I think. For my friends and colleagues who are still on the mainland in Beijing and elsewhere, you know, it's all consuming. Every day you're looking at the case counts and what's going to happen, and can I walk outside today, and are the supermarkets going to be closed? So it's really where everyone else was kind of 2 years ago. It's quite bizarre.
What's the situation, Mark, with the vaccine over there? I know China had their own vaccine. Is the majority of the population vaccinated over there? I mean, obviously we're having outbreaks here. We're having an uptick right now in the New York area throughout the country, but particularly where I am just outside New York City, where the percentage rates of people testing positive just up over 10% at the moment. Now, luckily, no one seems to be getting, or not no one, fewer people are getting very sick and getting in the hospitals. But what's the overall situation with the vaccine in China and where they're at as far as that's concerned?
Generally, it's been pretty good. But there's a couple of things to add here. Number one, the least vaccinated population is the elderly. They're just more skeptical. Historically, you know, they've lived through a lot here in China going back several decades. And so they're not as vaccinated as the rest of the population. But, you know, China's population is 1.4 billion people. Right. So I think they've had, you know, more than two, maybe coming up for 3 billion vaccinations at this point. But the elderly population, the most at risk, that's the one. That's why China is so bent on you know, trying to maintain this almost impossible COVID zero strategy, because they know that if they were to just let it rip, a number of the elderly population would get sick. And just when you extrapolate based off that 1.4 billion figure, which is, you know, comes into everything when it comes to China, it's just the size of the population. They would have a tough time, I think, for sure. The healthcare system isn't great, particularly if you get outside the major cities. And so they're aware of that as well. And then politically, you know, the data has shown that if you have three shots of the Chinese vaccine, you should be okay. Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't stand up compared to some of the foreign vaccines. Now, China hasn't approved any foreign vaccine so far, and there's definitely some political things at play there. And so that has been another thing that sort of hamstrung them and pushed them into this corner now. I think to allow foreign vaccines into the country would be sort of politically sensitive. So it's frustrating, I think, from a foreign perspective. But this is kind of where China is, and they've doubled down or even tripled down on trying to stick to COVID zero at least through the end of this year. And so that's why a lot of people are asking, you know, when will China ever emerge from that? When, what is the path to opening up? And we just don't know.
Yeah. And when you talk about opening up, obviously you're talking about live sports and sporting events. So obviously the Olympics happened. You wrote your book, Sporting Superpower, again, an insider's view on China's quest to be the best. I highly, highly recommend it. You can get it on Amazon. I've been reading it over the last couple of days. Fascinating stuff. You really focus on the 2008 Olympic Games, Mark, in the Summer Games in China. Obviously, it was Michael Phelps. It was Usain Bolt. You talk about being in the bird's eye for that, which I'm sure was awesome. But let's move forward a little bit because, you know, I want people to get your books. They can read about this, but we have a limited time here. I want to get to what's happening now after the Winter Olympics, because, of course, the Winter Olympics caused a huge stir here with the scandal of the Russian figure skater, the Peng Shui fiasco, as, you know, we were covering that here day in, day out for the when her story came out. So where do you see China right now as it as is related to sports in general? The WTA, you know, saying they're not going to come back to China. It may not even matter for the short term because of what you just said. There's going to be no events. They canceled the Asian Games. They canceled the World University Games. Will there be any live sports, do you think, in China this year? It sounds like no, there won't.
Yeah, absolutely not for 2022. In fact, just in the last few days, they canceled the Asian Cup, which is basically the Asian equivalent of the Euros, the European Championships in soccer. That was scheduled for June, July next year. Now, again, they said they couldn't guarantee a fully open tournament, which means, you know, thousands of international fans traveling between 10 cities, 24 teams. So a massive logistical undertaking and obviously miles away from where we are today in terms of COVID regulations. So no real surprise, but yeah, it's a depressing time. I have to say, you know, I came to China in the build up to the 2008 Olympics and have been there ever since. And there've been so many highlights as well as lowlights. And right now everything is just on pause. It's not really even a pause button, that they've just kind of hit the stop button. I think, you know, we don't know when things are going to open up. And when it comes to tennis, there's two things there, particularly with the WTA. Number one, even if they were going to play tournaments this year, and the ATP bizarrely still has some China tournaments on their calendar for this year.
Don't get me started on that.
Like 100%, those are not happening. Like, right. If they don't have a backup plan for those tournaments, they're really asleep at the wheel. But it, you know, COVID basically means nothing for this year. And the longer we go on, you know, questions start to be asked about 2023 as well. Then you've got the whole Peng Shui thing. So you know, we can get into that. But that is the elephant in the room, really. The WTA has called for some sort of resolution to that issue. They've called for an investigation. Now, right, we're not going to get an investigation from the Chinese side. We're not going to get an investigation from any other side for certain. And, you know, the Chinese narrative now is, well, it was all a misunderstanding. She's retracted these allegations. So, you know, nothing to see here. Let's move on. That's obviously not going to satisfy the WTA. So where do we go from here? Like, I just don't know. I don't see how this gets resolved. And if the WTA backs down, there's going to be a massive backlash given the stance that they've taken on this.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that they can't back down at this point. But you bring up the ATP, which I've criticized multiple times for not taking action, particularly, you know, earlier this year, in the end of last year when the Peng Shui situation came to light. So let me ask you this, Mark. Where do you think Peng Shui is doing right now? Like, what's her life like right now? Because we don't know. We have no idea. We were trying to follow her. We saw the facade that went on with the IOC and Thomas Bach. What a joke that was. But you live in China. And so you understand a lot better than I do. So explain to me what you think is going on with her right now.
Look, I'm going to preface this with saying this is entirely speculative. And different people will read the same situation in different ways. My sense is that she's, you know, relatively free to kind of day in, day out, do her thing, right? But you know, let's not be under any pretenses. she's definitely been told like what she did, you know, putting those allegations out there in a public sphere on Weibo, the Chinese equivalent of Twitter, against a very, very senior, high profile Chinese official. That is just like absolutely, completely taboo here. Within 20 minutes, it was fully censored and scrubbed from the internet. And so she'll be under no illusions. Like if she is to ever breathe word of that sort of thing again, there'll be serious repercussions. But the fact that she is, you know, she's been paraded on this sort of farcical exhibition tour from pre-Olympics with Thomas Bach and that call. Then she was even at the Eileen Gu freestyle final. Like, why did she need to be at the Olympics? She's a women's tennis player. The other thing is, She's basically 2 years retired at this point. So we're not going to see her in a tennis context anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So it's not like she's being prevented from playing. Again, it's definitions of freedom. Do I think she's locked up in some jail cell? Probably not. Does that mean she's free? Well, it depends on your definition. I don't imagine she's kind of locked down at home, but she might be. She might be. And again, it's I'm not trying to be an apologist for the Chinese state here. I'm just trying to give my best sense of probably what the top likelihood is. Does this mean this has been resolved and we should all forgive and forget? Well, absolutely not. But I think there are the levels of freedom. Again, from a Western perspective, this is probably a little bit more black and white. From a Chinese perspective, you know, being locked up and being locked at home, there's house arrest. There's kind of like, well, you're under watch. You're generally free to do. You've been kind of spoken to. There's probably a huge scale of freedom. And again, this is speculative, but that's probably my best assessment of where she is. Well, and others would disagree, but you know, I think that's probably where we are.
Well, you're someone who's lived there for 15 years. Mark Dreyer, everyone, again, his book is called Sporting Superpower. And in that book, you discuss obviously many athletes, many of the Chinese athletes, and the pressure they're under to perform in the Olympic Games, and why China has put so much into the Olympic Games. And you do discuss a Yao Ming, of course, who's well known here in the United States, maybe the most well known, Li Na, the great tennis champion, first time, you know, the only Chinese player that's won a couple, and she won a couple of majors, and she had this amazing personality which captivated tennis fans all over the place. You talk about her journey and her issues with the media and the press, and sort of speaking out against a little bit against the Chinese coaching system and the culture in her country. I haven't heard boo from her, you know, from the Peng Shuai standpoint. And the Chinese experts that I've spoken to over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, as this came to light, said, don't expect to hear from her from this situation. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, again, it goes back to your definition of freedom. You know, technically in the Chinese constitution, there is freedom of speech, but that's clearly just not the case. You know, the internet is heavily, heavily censored, and it is effective. Censorship really does work in China. And so you kind of have to, you know, I think people sometimes dismiss, oh, all the Chinese population are brainwashed. Well, you know, that's, I think, a hugely unfair accusation, but people do form their opinions based on what they're reading. And when you know, a lot of stuff is scrubbed or blocked from the internet, it's hard sometimes to get that more well-rounded perspective. And often in the West, we also have a one-sided perspective as well. On Li Na, you know, she is living and working in China. So she's just not in a position to be speaking out publicly on that. That's just not something that she can do. And again, people can criticize her for that, but it's not realistic. She has gone to business school. She's kind of turned to business. She has an academy with Nike. She's definitely kind of kept her head down a little bit, but I would expect her to be closely involved with tennis for many, many years. And I think just, you know, a word on Li Na, she is probably the best hope that we've seen for the Chinese sports industry. She's everything that Chinese athletes could hope to be in terms of becoming global superstars. You know, she had the Australian Open crowd eating out of the palm of her hand when she won her second Grand Slam in 2014 with her victory speech. I don't know if you're...
I was there in Melbourne. Yeah, it was amazing. I loved it. It was great.
Just like...
And her husband, and her husband is a classic too in the crowd. Oh, I love them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the jokes that she was making, people should go and look it up on YouTube. Like, you know, not perfect English, but perfectly good enough to make herself understood, and just hilarious. And, you know, she was... she's the best ambassador, you know, sports or otherwise, that I've seen from China, you know, in the 15 years that I've been here. So China needs more of this. The world needs more of Chinese superstars like Li Na. And hopefully, you know, post-COVID, we can get back to that. You know, there are some bright spots. Zhou Guanyu is a rookie in Formula One this year. Right. I actually just had him on my podcast, the China Sports Insider podcast, this week. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's from Shanghai and he can't even race in his home Grand Prix.
He can't get out of his apartment. He can't get out of his house. Right.
Well, he's on the circuit right now. He's in Spain, okay. But he can't come back to China. So that's frustrating for the growth of sports, for the growth of the sports industry here. But yeah, Li Na, what a story. It would be great to see more from her, but I think she's probably, there's more to come from Li Na for sure, I think.
Mark Dreyer joining me here on Holding Court. And, you know, you mentioned, the differences of the viewpoints, the opinions between the West and between China. And that's why I love having you on, because you live it, you're there, you're making your career out of being a journalist. You were a journalist in Europe for many years, working for multiple networks. You've obviously written this tremendous book. But when I don't know if you were paying attention during sort of the lead up to the Olympics and the Peng Shuai story, and then just the overall Olympic Games and the human rights issues that China is facing. So, I mean, it was a groundswell constantly of, you know, somebody like me who's, you know, just a tennis guy and just being asked to come on CNN and different networks and talk about it and putting this pressure on China. And is there a tipping point, you know, the WTA taking this quote unquote moral stand? Is, I know China just probably couldn't care less. Right. I mean, the economy is so huge. It's so big. Tennis is a very small part of it. But what does someone like you think about that, who sees the business side? You focus so much on sports, politics and business, that intersection. What does someone like you think about? Is this ever going to change the behavior, or should it, of the Chinese government, the communist system over there? Is this something that could actually impact them? You know, the NBA got a lot of criticism here in the U.S. for not standing up to China, for sort of kowtowing to them, the Houston Rockets story of a couple of years ago. Where do you come down on that whole debate?
Well, let me just talk about the NBA for a second, because you made a great point there. The NBA got absolutely crucified globally and in the U.S., yet they were so, you know, seen as being so offensive, basically, to the Chinese state with their stance, that it took them effectively 2.5 years before they were back on the national broadcast. So it's like there is no middle ground anymore. You know, if you've pissed off the Chinese side to the point where you are completely scrubbed, and basketball was a massive, massive sport. The NBA was huge, you know, Yao Ming, but even before that, people were big basketball fans in China. Yet their stance was seen somehow as kowtowing in the US. It's like, you know, you try to tread this middle ground, or even they thought they were kind of standing up for free speech, and that backfired massively. So it's like, that was when the China story and the implications of dealing with China, I think, really burst onto the global stage. That was the first time that this had become a global story. And I write about this in the book, that brands, sometimes often out of sports, fashion brands or hotel brands, airlines, they'd made some sort of faux pas, as China would see it, for perhaps they'd listed Taiwan as a separate country on their website, or they had said something that was seen as offensive to Chinese people online, and so they had to issue an apology. Now, the playbook back then was, you issue an apology in Chinese, you put it out on Chinese social media, you keep your head down for 2-3 months, you move on, and then someone else is in the firing line and you're kind of back to normal. The NBA story was the first time there was global attention. A global spotlight was shined on this. And so your actions in China for the first time were seen from a Western perspective in the West of the world. And so you were no longer able to play different sides and have one message to the US and have one message to China. And I think that's just a reality. And so where we are now in terms of, the business implications of Peng Shuai and all these different things, I try as best as I can to kind of keep my own personal opinion out of it and just sort of think, well, what are the implications of this? The WTA has taken a stand. They have basically said, we're not playing in China indefinitely until we get some resolution.
Some sort of answer, right?
which we're not going to get.
Right.
That obviously puts a lot of pressure on the ATP, because if they come back to China, they'll be seen as being traitors to the women's. There'll be a huge reputational backlash if the men's tour comes back to China. Particularly, a lot of the men's players spoke out. Even if the tour didn't, the men's players spoke out in defense of Peng Shuai. Then you've got the NBA thing and the issues that they've had. You've got the Premier League. They've had a couple of players who've tweeted about the situation in Xinjiang and human rights and the Uyghurs and so on. And so a lot of sports brands are beginning to think, is China worth the trouble?
Right. Well, that's,
Yes, it's the biggest market in the world. Mm-hmm. Yes, in an ideal situation, we would want to engage with China. But we don't really think, to your earlier question, we don't really think we're going to change China. Mm-hmm. The government's not going to suddenly be like, oh, sure, yeah, let's kind of, you know, adopt what we see as this Western perspective of human rights. So
something's got to give, right? I mean, something has to give. Yeah.
And right now, China is beginning to lose out. You know, I say that as someone who's made a career in China for the past 15 years. It's desperately disappointing and frustrating for me to see that. But if you have the Premier League sort of thinking, you know what, China's great, but maybe India is a better market for us. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's pivot to other nations. When China sets itself up as China versus the world, the world is always going to win. It's just a bigger market, you know, and it's your home market for all these brands. If it was China versus India versus, you know, individual markets, right, then sure, but it's not. Everything is viewed from a global perspective, through a global lens today. And that is where we are.
Yeah. It sounds like China has always thought of it, you know, we're going to show everybody and we got the economic might. Well, we know they have the military might too, but just from the standpoint of sports, that they've got so much economic clout that they could sort of dictate the terms. And it seems like that tide is starting to just, I'm not going to say it's turn, but it's evolving right now. And with COVID happening, you know, I said this during when the pandemic was at its highest here, you know, I didn't go to Wimbledon. Wimbledon didn't happen. You know this well, you covered it. You were there, you're English. You know, the world went on, life continued, right? Without Wimbledon, it didn't happen in 2020. And you know, the rest of the world just went on. I mean, if all of a sudden there's no tennis in China, guess what? There's still going to be tennis. Tennis is still going to happen. I want to ask you this before I let you go, and you've already given me a tremendous amount of time and just unbelievable, unbelievable stuff, Mark, is just announced here today in the U.S., you probably heard this because you cover all sports, that the women's soccer team is going to be getting the same payments from the U.S. Soccer Federation that the men's team are getting, based on, you know, their how they perform in the World Cup and how they've sold their own matches, their friendlies, and so on. What's your take on that as someone who knows this sport inside out?
Well, from a Chinese perspective, it's actually kind of interesting. Historically, the women in China have done much better than the men. Not universally, but kind of across the board.
Definitely in tennis. Definitely in tennis.
Certainly in tennis. Also in the Olympics, I think about, you know, maybe 2/3 of gold medals over the last number of Olympic games have been won by women versus the men, which is pretty significant. Women's soccer, some of your listeners will remember that China got to the final against the US. Yes. Just about a couple of decades ago. They've tailed off slightly, but the men's team has been awful. Mm-hmm. And continues to be awful. So the women are certainly much better. One person who stands out, again, probably not very well known over there, but Zhu Ting is a volleyball player. She was playing professionally in Turkey, reportedly making $1 million, the first female player globally to be making that kind of salary. So far more higher profile than some of her male counterparts. So again, it's sports specific. There's some big stars in men's when it comes to, you know, ping pong and badminton and so on. But I think actually, when it comes to the sporting sphere here, the women have certainly more than held their own. And so, you know, that's good to see. I think obviously parity in tennis, we've had parity for a long time. With some of the tournaments taking a little bit longer than others to catch up. But I think that's certainly the way we're going, and good to see soccer making steps in that direction as well.
All right, before I let you go, Mark, your prediction on when will we see professional tennis back in China?
That's probably one of the biggest, they're probably one of the hardest questions to answer right now.
That's why I asked it.
Yeah. I'm, can you tell I'm stalling for time?
Yes, I can.
2025.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was right there with you. 2025. By the time this all blows over, COVID blows over, and maybe China relaxes things just a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been there in years. I've been there many times to play back in my playing days, but I haven't been there in a long time. But I think I will bow to you on that prediction. I'm with you.
Well, come back to me then and we'll see who's right.
Sounds good. Mark Dreyer, everyone. You could follow him on Dreyer China on Twitter. And again, his book, Sporting Superpower. And tell the name of your podcast again so everybody could follow that and check that out.
The China Sports Insider Podcast.
China Sports Insider Podcast. I thank you so much for joining me. I know we pulled this together pretty quickly, so I appreciate it very much. And anytime you want a little American vibe on your podcast, I'm available.
Awesome. Massively enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me on.
You got it. Mark Dreyer here on Holding Court.
Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe is powered by Mudhouse Media.